I'm Louise McSharry in for Ryan Tuberty this week, and Dr. Nina Burns is in studio now and available to answer your medical questions. So text us now, 51552. If you want to talk to Nina, then give us a call, 1850 715 922 or email tubs@rt.ie. Good morning. How are you?
Thanks for having me.
Sorry, I should probably turn your microphone on there. Very nice to see you again.
It's nice to be here.
Well, we better get down to business because I know there's never enough time for all the questions in this. So we'll start with this one from Kira. It says, hello there. I suffer from what I think is a heat rash around my mouth during warmer weather. I tend to sweat from my upper lip. Very glamorous, I know. But when this happens, my lips get itchy and eventually break out in an irritating rash, which then dries up and flakes away. This process will continue until I reach cooler climates. Is there anything you can recommend I do to combat this? Listening to you from Australia, by the way. Oh, well, hello, Kira, in Australia. That would be a problem in Australia.
Well, sometimes, I mean, if you get a flaking or scaling rash, particularly at the corners of the mouth, it can sometimes be fungal. And I guess if it's happening in heat and sweating, there is more of a chance that there's a yeast or a fungus because obviously they love a warm, moist environment. So she could try some Caniston cream, which is an antifungal cream that's available pretty most places. So I'm sure she can get it over the counter in Australia as well. And just to put that around the mouth, and that can help.
Okay, great.
Let it go. Yep.
Great. Emma says, hi, can you please ask the doctor about anal skin tags? Do they have to be surgically removed or can my GP do anything for them? They are very large and uncomfortable.
Okay. Anal skin tags could be what we call redundant piles. If you've ever had hemorrhoids or piles, which essentially are varicose veins in the back passage, when they calm down and settle, you're often left with just kind of some loose skin that often is around the anal area. So if that's all it is and they're not bothering you, you don't actually have to do anything about them. You can also get skin tags, which are just a slightly different growth of skin that aren't related to a varicose vein. And obviously in the anogenital area, the other thing you think about is whether it's warts, because they are far more common than people think. So go to your doctor who will have a look at them. If they're simply warts or very small skin tags, you can actually freeze those with cryotherapy, and many GP surgeries can do that for you. But if they're large, and particularly if they have a thick base, because it's the base of it that you're looking at, if you're freezing it, you want a nice thin base so it'll just die and fall off. So really, if they're large or look like they go up into the anal area, then you'd have to be referred on to someone, because it would be a more technical surgical procedure that would probably be done under a general anaesthetic.
That's one of those ones that people would probably be very uncomfortable going to the doctor with.
You know, but the one thing, and I know we say it all the time, you cannot embarrass your doctor. Believe me, we have seen it before. We will see it again. There is nothing you can show us that we haven't seen before. And I know it's really hard to believe when you think it's something, you know, it's so embarrassing and it's not something you talk about and you feel like you're the only person who has this or has ever had it, but it's just not true. And I promise you, you know, you really won't make any doctor feel uncomfortable. Any doctor who feels uncomfortable examining someone in an intimate area shouldn't be a doctor, because it's part of our job. Yeah. You know, we have to do it, and it's our job to make you feel comfortable.
I had a doctor once. I was getting a smear and I mentioned that I was uncomfortable, and she said, do you think I like it? No, she was joking.
Yeah.
But I thought that nicely diffused the situation. Okay.
Yeah, well, I often joke with people. They come in and they say, I'm not particularly looking forward to this. You know, if they're having blood tests or some unpleasant exam, and I say, well, I'd be a little bit worried if you were. It's quite normal not to look forward to this, but you know, it's a necessary evil.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this one says, I'm just looking for advice. I'm feeling a bit depressed and getting down on myself very easily. I'm also being snappy at others. How can I stop this?
Okay, well, first of all, feeling snappy at others is a very common symptom of depression, because when people are down, they're more irritable and you tend to lash out at those that are close to you. So don't feel guilty about that, because then feeling guilty is also part of depression. I mean, you've contacted us here, which is obviously you are seeking help. And I think a really important thing is to follow through on that. So go and talk to your doctor. They can help you. Contact, you know, there are different counselling places you can go. They're usually local counsellors. If you're feeling very down and feeling life isn't worth living, I always think Pieta House is an excellent support to people in that. So just keep talking. You know, you've contacted the radio, but that's a first step. You need to talk to people, because help is there. And the one thing I'd say is depression or anxiety affect up to 1 in 9 people. It's more common than breast cancer. It's more common than many other illnesses, but we don't talk about it.
Yeah.
But it is a treatable condition. A lot of people think that they feel like this and they're going to feel like this forever. It's just not the case. The majority of people, once they get help, get better. So you don't have to feel the way you do. And please, please go talk to someone.
Okay, great. John says, my ex-wife was sleeping around and I never got tested for STDs and was wondering what kind of tests I would have to go through.
Okay, well, yeah, I mean, look, I think STI screens for anyone who is sexually active are a good idea. It's a form of preventive health. And as anyone who listens to the show knows, I'm all about people staying well. Most GPs will do an STI screen for you if you prefer not to go to your doctor. I know in Dublin, certainly, the Mater and St. James's would have clinics where they run these, and around the country, most hospitals, most big hospitals do. It involves simply for men, a urine sample, which checks for chlamydia and gonorrhea. Now, that urine ideally should be the first drops of the first urine of the morning, or you shouldn't go for at least 3 hours before you go to the doctors. There's usually a swab taken just for general infection, and then it's blood tests. So the blood tests are for HIV, hepatitis B, C and syphilis. It'll also involve an examination because, as I said, I already mentioned anogenital warts. There isn't actually a test you can do for those, but the doctor can look and see, do you have any signs of those? Do you have any signs of herpes? And these are really unpleasant things to think about, but they're far more common than people think. You know, I would treat people with STIs most weeks in the surgery. Right. So go along and have a screen. And you know, most of these come back completely clear, and that in itself is a real bonus, and you feel much better. And especially, you've obviously been extremely hurt in your relationship, and you know, you part of your, I heard you talking in the way in about getting over and moving on. And I think there's a certain sense of having to have closure. And if he's going to keep wondering, did he catch anything, it's not going to give you closure. And I think getting all clear, hopefully, will help with that.
Good to start a new relationship with a clean slate as well.
I often see people in new relationships coming in, both people in the relationship. And it's really common in the States, you know, it would almost be normal in the States for people in a new relationship to both go and get an STI screen and almost exchange results. In Ireland, it's sort of seen, a lot of people think, oh, those who get STI screens must sleep around or not be, you know, but actually people who get STI screens are proactive about their sexual health and are, you know, it's a very good way to approach your sexual health. So I recommend it.
Okay, super. This message says, my son, who is 19, had a nauseous stomach last week and constipation, but he still has pain high up in the stomach. Not too bad, he says, when he stands or walks. I think he should go to the doctor, as I thought he may be gastric, as he is burping too. Please advise.
Yeah, look, there's been quite a lot of GI upset around at the moment, and quite often it can affect the upper and lower gut. So the upper gut would be the stomach, where you can get burping and vomiting and a feeling of acid, and then the lower stomach can be diarrhea, wind. Your large bowel does kind of come up the right side of your stomach across the top and down the left. So just because the pain is up the top doesn't necessarily mean it's the stomach. It can actually be the bowel. But I would go more on the symptoms you have. And if you have certainly heartburn, I should say, and a lot of burping and acid, there are medications that can help with that. So if it's not settling simply, and most simple viral gastroinfections will settle over about 7 to 10 days, you know, you'll feel better. Often the diarrhea all stops after 3 to 5, but you might feel a bit off for a few more days. But if it's lasting longer than that, do go along and get checked.
Okay. Jane says, does taking HRT just delay the hot sweats, etc.?
It's a difficult one to answer because it varies. But yes, in the majority of cases, to a certain extent, yes. As in, HRT just gives you back the hormones your body isn't making. But when you stop that, you will ultimately get usually some symptoms of menopause. It may not, however, be as dramatic, because if you're taking HRT, what people often do when they're stopping is they don't just stop it suddenly, they wean down. So they slowly reduce the amount of estrogen in the body and the body gets a bit more used to it. But menopause varies hugely from woman to woman. The definition of menopause is a year since your last menstrual period. Okay, so that's the definition. So once you've gone a full year, then any sort of changes after that, or, you know, any bleeding after that would be considered abnormal. The other symptoms, the hot flushes, the dryness, the, you know, and some women report mood swings, they vary hugely. And in 85% of women, they're gone in within 5 years. But, you know, there is that 15% where they go on longer. And how long is the question in those?
Yeah.
So there isn't really any scientific basis to this. We often say, ask your older sisters, your mother. It's not really scientific, but you do see families will say, oh, you know, my mother sailed through, and then you see no one else has problems. So I only recommend HRT for extremely disabling symptoms of menopause, because obviously HRT has its risks. It increases the risk of clot and stroke and breast cancer. But in some women, it can be extremely helpful. But I do always say to them, look, you know, there's a good chance that when you stop this, you are going to get some symptoms. So unfortunately, for some women, there is no answer where they can go into menopause and not have any symptoms at all.
Yeah, that's the dream, I suppose.
Yeah. And you know what? If you look back generations past, you know, you see it all the time. People ask their mothers and they say, oh, my mother told me she'd no problem. She had a baby and that was it. And for some reason, you know, we seem to have more symptoms. And whether it's just we're more in tune, whether our mothers and grandmothers were more stoic, I don't know. But, you know, we do have solutions. And I suppose the one thing I'd say is, don't sit at home suffering. There are options out there. But unfortunately, there isn't a pill that will just make it go away and never come back.
I suppose we've so much access to information as well. It's very easy for us to diagnose ourselves with all kinds of different things or expect lots of different problems. Yeah. This message says, I would like to ask the doctor about an uncomfortable chest pain that comes and goes and excess sweating and stabbing pain in my neck and arm that comes and goes as well. I've had this for the past 2 days.
Okay, chest pain can be so many different things. So it's one of those symptoms that in the majority of cases is completely benign and muscular or something, but obviously in more severe cases can be related to your heart or other problems. So I would always go and talk to your doctor about chest pain. You know, you didn't mention your age or your sex or any other, you know, whether you smoke or anything like that. And all those things are actually important when you're analysing someone with chest pain. You want to know, have they any history of heart disease in the family? Do they smoke? Do they drink? Is it related to eating? Is it related to moving? So there's about 15 different questions I'd like to ask that person right now to help answer. So all I would say is if you have a chest pain that is making you sweat and feel sick and uncomfortable, do go and talk to your doctor about it.
Okay. This is an interesting one. It says, I need some advice. I can't stop pulling out my hair. I've been doing it since I can remember, mainly from the hair at the top of my head and at the back, but it's making my hair very thin in areas. How can I stop?
Okay, that is a psychological condition. And I suppose it's there are usually roots in other issues. So it can be associated with anxiety or mood changes. So, you know, if it's really quite obvious, and if you can't, don't feel you can control it, I would go talk to your doctor, and they could refer you on for psychological therapy. And occasionally, medication, psychiatric medication that's used for depression and anxiety can help improve some of these features. So don't keep doing it, because, you know, it, unfortunately, some people can actually end up giving themselves quite large bald patches from this. So it is important that you go and talk to someone and get help.
Okay. This says, I have a really bad acidic feeling in my throat. I'm told it's heartburn, but I keep getting it in waves throughout the day. I've taken Rennie and it does help soothe it. But should I still be getting this sensation?
Okay, well, if you take Rennie for the symptoms and it helps soothe it, it's quite likely it is acid, because the way Rennie works is it neutralises the acid coming from the stomach. You may have a simple thing called a hiatus hernia, which is where the tube, you know, the esophagus is the tube that runs from the throat down into the stomach, and it's nice and tight normally at the bottom, which keeps the acid, which is normal in our stomach, it stops it coming up. But if that tube is slightly open, you can have a thing called a hiatus hernia, which is where the acid can kind of constantly leak back up. Or sometimes after meals, when it doesn't close as tightly, it can go back up. People who smoke tend to have looser sphincters there as well. Thankfully, there are medicines that are really helpful, and the prescription medicines we use, they actually just stop the stomach making acid. So if there's no acid, there's no heartburn.
Wow.
So depending on your age, if you're just under 50 and you've simple heartburn, your doctor may even just put you on a course of this medicine just for a month and see, does that settle the problem? If the symptoms come back after that, it's quite likely you'd be referred to check for a bug in your stomach called Helicobacter, or an endoscopy, or gastroscopy, which is a test where they directly look in the stomach to see, do you have an ulcer or one of these hiatus hernias? So do go talk to your doctor. There are options there. And if you're needing to take Rennie regularly, you probably need something stronger than that.
Okay. Speaking of hernias, this says, I have an umbilical hernia. Have I said that right?
Umbilical,
okay. I'm waiting on third operation to repair mine. I'm now due reconstructive surgery on it. How long is the recovery? As I was told, a major operation. It would be a major operation this time. Also, any suggestions for non-codeine-based painkillers, as I struggle every day while I'm waiting?
Okay, well, I suppose, again, depending on a person's circumstance, recovery from operations varies. If you're a young, thin, very fit person having a simple procedure, you know, you'll recover very quickly. But if you have had multiple surgeries, which obviously this person has, if you're overweight going into surgery, which, you know, some people with hernias have a more of a tendency to be, so then your recovery can be more complicated and the risks for you going into surgery are higher. So I think the person to talk to about the risks is always your surgeon, because they have you in front of them. They know, and especially if this person has operated on you before, they know that there'll be scar tissue, etc. But I mean, if they've called it a major operation, you're talking at least 6 weeks, really, you know, for recovery. That's the average. But as I said, it varies hugely. The painkiller question, you know, Ireland is one of the only countries where codeine-containing painkillers are available over the counter, and many doctors, myself included, think that shouldn't be the case, because these painkillers, once you start taking them, can be very hard to stop. There are lots of options out there. Go talk to your doctor. People underestimate the power of paracetamol. It's actually a very good painkiller, and paracetamol combined with an anti-inflammatory agent like ibuprofen or something, you know, a stronger anti-inflammatory can be very effective. If you are, look, codeine is a great drug when used appropriately, and if you have a need for it, to use it pre-op would be fine, but just make sure that you are using it in conjunction with a prescription from your doctor so that your use of it can be monitored, because managing it yourself can become very difficult, and it can become very difficult to stop if you get used to buying it yourself.
Okay, this is an appropriate one given the weather that we've been having recently. It says, I suffer from excessive armpit sweating, so much so it dictates what clothes I wear. Normal antiperspirant doesn't work, and the stronger clinical strength ones irritate my skin. Do I have other options other than Botox or surgery, and which would you recommend?
Well, I was about to say that they use Botox for sweating, so yeah. I can't really think of any other options. It sounds like you've tried all of them. Again, it's very hard when you don't see a person sitting in front of you. You know, one of the things with sweating is people don't think of is actually it's really important to drink lots of fluids. If you don't drink enough water, your sweat is concentrated and it smells much more. So a simple thing, if it's the smell of the sweat that's bothering you, is drink lots and lots of water. Obviously, and I'm sure this person knows that, wearing loose cotton clothes, changing your clothes frequently, being as normal a weight as possible. I mean, sweating is the body's way of cooling itself down. It's a normal process. So that's the first thing. Everybody sweats. Nobody admits to it, but everybody sweats.
I sweat a lot. Yeah. I will admit to that. I'm a sweaty person.
Yeah, and some people do sweat more than others, but look, it can seriously impact on your quality of life, and you know, Botox can work, and they also used to do surgery where they cut one of the nerves which supplies the sweat glands, and that can be helpful as well. So you've tried the prescription antiperspirants, so I think really you need to explore the other options.
Okay, this message says, I've been dry retching for over a month now for no reason, at random. It's mostly after I eat. I've tried eating less or slower and loads of other things, but nothing's working. Help.
Okay, so again, it would be helpful, you know, to know your age or if you have any other medical problems. Nausea, obviously, if it was a young female, the first question I'd ask is there any chance that you're pregnant? It's probably one of the most common symptoms that a pregnant woman would notice. So if you are young and female and in a relationship, I would certainly rule that out. And the kits you buy in a pharmacy are as good as the ones doctors have, and in fact, better. Secondly, all the things we spoke about before, hiatus hernia, heartburn, they can all cause those kind of symptoms. Gallstones can cause those kind of symptoms. So do go along, have a chat with your doctor. You know, there are, if it's a simple stomach irritation, again, taking that tablet that stops the acid for a month can help. And then another one people don't think about is anxiety. You know, it might not be a physical problem. Psychological issues can cause abdominal pain, vomiting. So that's something to consider as well.
Okay, and finally, I'd like to ask the doctor about a discoloration under one of my arms. The skin is darker than the rest of the skin and it has only recently occurred.
Okay, so certain rashes like that can be nothing, but they can, rashes like that can in some cases be associated with autoimmune conditions. So diabetes and celiac disease are things that can cause unusual rashes. So if you have any of those conditions, that might be the cause. Other than that, go along and let your doctor look at it again. I always say rashes are something, and moles, you can't diagnose one without looking at it. So you need to go to your doctor. They need to have a look. They may do some bloods just to make sure that you know everything else is okay. And if that's all okay, it could be just a simple change. The other thing could be that if you shave or use hair removal creams, it could just be kind of a thickening of the skin and an irritation. And sometimes changing products can help as well.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Nina Burns. I feel like you kind of run the gauntlet when you go in here. I just throw questions at you, but you're great. Thanks so much.
The GP.
Thanks a million. Come